views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium. Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. It is a Friday afternoon. It's a pretty breezy day as we broadcast to you from North Carolina. Today's date is November the 25th, 2016. And just a quick note, I noticed traffic was down yesterday to the websites and to the podcast. Some of that could have been my fault. I noticed that our website was down for, looks like, about 4 hours last night due to some traffic, which I'm attributing to our campaign, which just concluded to promote the platform to Ghana in Africa. So just some quick notes that I wanted to make sure that I share with you before we get started. But I attribute a lot of the other traffic during the other times to people watching football on so-called Turkey Day. Check out the podcast that was posted for, I think, the Barbershop episode number 9. I think R.G. Reed made some good references to what are you being thankful for. So check those out. One of the independent black media producers distributed through the network. Today we do have an interview lined up. Want to focus on political prisoners today, prisoners of war. And so we will, or hope to be joined by Ms. Sophia Williams, who is a self-affirming radical activist with the campaign to bring Momia home for the past 3 years. She is also a resident of the Bronx, New York. Do want to talk to her about some updates, because as we have reported, Momia's in a court battle to get access to the medication hepatitis C. And I just saw a commercial on cable the other night promoting this drug to cure hepatitis C, like in 12 treatments. So they already offering it to the public, but they're denying it to prisoners, where there's an epidemic, an unreported epidemic of hepatitis C, and this is something that can be cured. So he has a court battle going on. Hopefully, maybe she can give us an update on where that stands. But also to talk about an upcoming event on December the 6th, if you are in the New York area, at the Schomburg Center for Research in Black Culture, New York Public Library, which is located at 515 Malcolm X Boulevard in, of course, New York. And again, that's at December the 6th. They are, I guess you could call it like a rally for a victim of racism, victim of terrorism. And that is Miss Ramona Africa, who will be recording what is described as a web-based series, which is modeled after a popular TV show called Inside the Actor Studio. And this is called Inside the Activist Studio. And they will be interviewing her on December the 6th at the Schomburg Center. So I've always talked about the importance of media, right, and media propaganda, and the six corporations that control 95% of what the world sees. And we have to use by any means necessary, as Malcolm would say, to counter their propaganda and also to inform people. Everything's not about propaganda, but it's also to educate people on recent history, documenting that history of terrorism against, especially against black people, but non-white people, as we see what they're doing to the people at Standing Rock. We mentioned it yesterday, or I mentioned it yesterday on my broadcast, with Leonard Peltier putting out his annual Day of Mourning statement. Check that out. Yesterday's podcast is up for you to download. But so today we will be talking about the history surrounding these victims of racist terrorism, of slavery. Again, Mumia Abu-Jamal, associated with the Black Panther Party as a teenager, and then later became affiliated with the MOVE organization, which was founded by John Africa, who, of course, is a victim who is no longer with us because they killed him, along with
this call
others.
Is being recorded.
And I think we are being joined by our guest. Let me just check and welcome on. I believe we have Ms. Williams on. Ms. Williams, do we have you on the line?
Yes, you do, Brother Scotty. How are you?
I'm doing as well as I can be, sometimes better than others, but still suffering under this system, so I don't like to complain, but how are you today?
I'm doing well. It's a quite gray day, but other than that, I'm doing well.
Okay. Well, thank you for joining us here today and being part of the effort to promote this upcoming event, which I just mentioned will be on December the 6th at the Schomburg Research, Schomburg Center, as well as hopefully we can get some information from you in terms of the campaign which you're representing to free Mumia. I just mentioned he has a court case in trying to get access to the life-saving cure that they have for hepatitis C. Now, if you know anything or just any information you would like to share in relation to him, we would love to hear it. But first, let's get to know you. I believe this is maybe the first time I've interviewed you, right?
Yes, you're correct.
Okay, but I do have a question for you. You, in the email that you sent to me, described yourself as a radical activist. Now, I wrote it as a self-affirming radical activist. People call me militant. I embrace that. I don't reject that. But why do you call yourself a radical activist as opposed to just an activist?
Well, part of the reason, and thank you for that question, part of the reason why I call myself a radical activist is essentially I am 1,000% committed to the struggle of social justice activism, committed to the struggle of creating a more humane, compassionate society. And part of doing that requires one to be radical in their actions and in their words, and to not stop the fight even when things seem so impossible, and when things feel as if it's just not going to happen. We've been fighting for so many decades, and it's easy for one to decide, well, what have we achieved? Where have we gone? How have things changed since the 60s? And where are we now? But I think being a radical activist means that you are completely, as I mentioned, completely committed, wholeheartedly, and it becomes a part of who you are and a part of your entire life. And for me, I see activism in that sense, and I have to be radical with it, because it's either that or we get succumbed by the system we're living in.
Now, there are people in mainstream media and other places as well, but I tend to focus a lot on media because they put out, they create a lot of the perception of the masses. So words that they use are important, and they may use radical and mean it in a derogatory term. So this is why it's important to know the definition of words as they have defined them, because we did not. I speaking for myself as an African descendant person, did not create the English language, but I do live in a country or a nation ruled by a corporation that, uses English as its official language. So a couple of definitions here. It is an adjective. Radical is an adjective, especially of change or action relating to or affecting the fundamental nature of something, far-reaching or thorough. I can certainly get down with that. Number two, advocating or based on thorough or complete political or social reform, representing or supporting an extreme section of a political party. So they throw in extreme, but what is extremist? Extremism, to be free, what some people say that's extreme. No, to me, that's logical thinking, to be free and not to be enslaved. As a noun, a person who advocates thorough or complete political or social reform, a member of a political party or part of a party pursuing such aims. And last, in chemistry, a group of atoms behaving as a unit in a number of compounds. Thank you for indulging me in reading those definitions.
You're welcome, brother.
Now, you have been with the campaign to bring Mumia home for the past 3 years. Were you, like myself, a latecomer to some issues or campaigns? Or I don't know your age, and I was taught not to ask ladies their age, but you look fairly young in the picture that came up. So I just want to know what attracted you to radical activism in associating yourself with others.
Okay, so yes, another great question. What attracted me to activism essentially was within the classroom. I have to be honest, I had no intention to get into activism on this level and to deepen my struggle to fight for something better. I came upon a class. It was in 2011, fall 2011, and I had a professor that essentially was the initiator in transforming my mental capabilities. I honestly did not understand how mentally imprisoned I was. And it was when I took her class and even another class after that with her that I began to realize the truth about the system that I've never been told in my entire life. And that was a political awakening for me, huge political awakening. And so that's kind of where, that's really where it began. I remembered on the first day of class, Mumia Abu-Jamal's name was mentioned, and that struck me, and I felt compelled to know more about him, his case, and what's going on in the struggle to free him. And I remember sitting in class just feeling like, what is all of this I'm learning? Taking the readings home and not understanding them, but coming into class and walking out with a whole different understanding of what these readings were trying to say. Particularly, yes, the class was very helpful in breaking down things, but again, having a professor to really put the correct, teach things in a certain way that tells you the truth, number one, but does it in such a gripping way, it helps. So I began to learn things that I just had no idea about. So that's essentially where my start began. But it really wasn't until 2 years after the fact of taking this class or these classes and being influenced by her and those classes that I began to get involved directly in the larger Mumia movement.
Thank you. Now, I know we only have short time with you, so I want to move on. This is what I wrote, and I would just ask you to then give us some updates on where Mumia is. Of course, we want him free. That is the ultimate demand. But his life is on the line literally right now, as has mm-hmm. been a number of political prisoners of war. I think right now there's a campaign for Imam Jamil Alameen, formerly known as H.R.A.P. Brown, for a medical pardon from President Obama. We've shared that petition around. But Mumia, again, is looking pretty bad in some of the photos I've seen. You can clearly see his health is deteriorating, and they are withholding this life-saving cure, not a treatment, but a cure for hepatitis C. And so we'd like to get an update on the legal aspect of that. But because also we're going to be talking to you about this upcoming Inside the Activist Studio interview mm-hmm. with Ramona Africa. But just to give some people some history of Mumia who may have never heard of him, in addition to the Black Panther Party, which I mentioned in the beginning, he was a teenager. He worked on a newspaper. He apparently had it in him to become a journalist. And again, he currently is a U.S. held political prisoner. But he was also one of the lone voices at the time of the 1985 bombing of the MOVE organization headquarters and family compound founded by John Africa. At that time, he was working in mainstream media, local news media, and you can find clips of him reporting on the attack in the aftermath and asking questions of people in power. And so this attack, this bombing by the FBI, Philadelphia police, and firefighters is documented in the film Let the Fire Burn, 1985 MOVE bombing in Philadelphia. And Mumia would become affiliated with the MOVE organization later, maybe during that time period where he witnessed this terrorist attack. Even though he's a member of the media, mm-hmm. he was objectively reporting on it. So where do things stand with Mumia, his court case to get access to this life-saving cure for hepatitis C?
Well, I don't have, unfortunately, the details of exactly where things are right now on the legal standpoint with Mumia's Hep C health case. I do know that I think it was about a couple months ago his attorneys filed something in court in response to the judge's decision, and I believe that is what we are waiting on to see what the judge now says. But other than that, I don't have any updates on the legal standpoint of things with Mumia. Just to continue on the topic of Mumia, what I do have an update on, or I can share this news, is that on December 9th, there will be an event in Philadelphia that essentially, December 9th, as many people may know, is the 35th year since the system initially tried to kill Mumia. So that is the day this year in which there will be an event rally at 3 p.m. in Philadelphia, and at 6 or 6:30 p.m. there will be a indoor function to talk more with people and to essentially share more that's happening around Mumia and most likely the next steps. So that event is taking place in Philadelphia, and if you would like, I can always send you the flyer to post on your networks around this event.
By
so that's the next
means,
big thing with Mumia
means.
That
okay.
I know about.
The last thing that I could find was it looks like they denied him access, a federal judge denied him access. Democracy Now! Has a report from September the 2nd, and I hadn't seen anything since then, and I guess you hadn't either. because that's a long time ago. And it says a federal judge has denied a request from the former Black Panther and journalist Mumia Abu-Jamal for life-saving medication that could cure his hep C. Last year, Mumia sued to receive an antiviral treatment for hepatitis C. Again, I just saw a commercial for this for the first time as I was scanning the cable channels, and I saw this hep C commercial, and I was like, man, they putting it out there to the public and denying not just Mumia, but all prisoners on their plantations. And it's epidemic rates, and the media is, of course, ignoring it. This medication has a 95% cure rate. So I'm sure that his lawyers, Bob Boyle, and others, I think at the Abolitionist Law Center, Brent Grody, I think, may have been representing him as well. But I'm sure they have appealed that decision. So that's the latest on that. So just see how cruel the corporation USA Inc. is. This is inhumane. This isn't about just Mumia, although he's important and they want to kill him. But this is about everybody. You may go into prison on a marijuana charge, cannabis charge, you know, something totally nonviolent, and then you obtain hep C. And then they deny you treatment to hep C. So this is a human rights violation, in my opinion. Did you have any further comments before you tell us about this December 6th event featuring Ramona Africa giving her testimony on being the terrorist attack that she survived?
Yeah, before I get into that, yes, I agree pretty much with, you know, what you said, that it's a human rights violation to the very core, and it's also a clear attempt yet again for them to find another way in which to kill Mumia, and this time they're doing it slowly to torture him. So it's important that supporters continue to rally around him. You know, it's one thing to go out there in the streets at rallies and protests and be at meetings and be at events to organize around his case, but it's also important to, I think, just send him a letter and to build one-on-one with him and let him know that we're here totally supporting him and keeping him in our thoughts and prayers as we fight this hard but important fight to bring him home.
I'm sorry, I had my mic cut off. Tell us about the upcoming event with Ramona Africa. Again, she's the sole survivor of the 1985, I would say, FBI / Philadelphia Police / Philadelphia Firefighters bombing of the MOVE headquarters and family compound.
Yes. So the campaign to bring Mumia home, we're having an event called Inside the Activist Studio, and it features an interview with the longstanding freedom fighter Ramona Africa, as you have noted. And just a quick note for those who may not be aware, this is our project that we've been tediously working on, and it's now come to fruition. For about 2 years we've been working on this, and last year we had our first episode, which featured former political prisoner Sekou Odinga, and this year we're now having our second episode featuring Ramona Africa. And just a bit about Inside the Activist Studio, we came across this project when we were talking to ourselves, talking amongst each other, and how we can routinize and deepen our work into something that can get more people involved. And this is actually something that we came up with. And just to note, for those who are familiar, it is based on the popular TV show Inside the Actors Studio. And we have it as it's an interview style web-based series. And This episode will take place at the Schomburg Center for Research in Black Culture on December 6th, Tuesday, December 6th. Doors open at 6. The interview starts promptly at 6:30. And one of the key things that we do with every episode of Inside the Activist Studio is that we feature an interview with an activist, and we get to know them one-on-one. We get to know their personal story, get to know more about them, the things that we may not know about them, and delve into their personal story. But the biggest thing that we do is to talk more on their political awakening and their personal story of activism. And that's what we will be doing with Ramona. It's a live taped show for an audience. And just to read here, one of our aim is to document social justice activism and the many lessons of struggle, rebuild a culture of resistance, especially now in the times that we're living in of President-elect Trump, and inspire many others to become activists and to help change this world, help to bring forth a more compassionate, humane society. And lastly, to educate the public about the many social justice movements that has been seen in our times of history. So that's really the essence of Inside the Activist Studio, and we look forward to so many coming out in such an important institution in Harlem, the Schomburg Center for Black Culture. So that's what I wanted to note. But quickly, before I end on this, another piece of Inside the Activist Studio that I think is really important that I share is that it really, one of the purposes is that it really aims to raise the profile of political prisoners and to continue building a movement to put a stop to mass incarceration. And of course, it is rooted in the tradition of Mumia Abu-Jamal's groundbreaking political journalism, which he continues to do today, by the way.
Thank you. May I just offer one suggestion on the mass incarceration?
Term
is that we discard that term, because I look at it, and I'm speaking of a person who is a member of an abolitionist community. We call ourselves New Abolitionists. We do a program every Wednesday night on this network on the issue of 21st century slavery and human trafficking. And you might note that Ava DuVernay just came out recently with a documentary that's on Netflix called The 13th. Yeah. And it has an exception clause in there that permits slavery. And so when we say mass incarceration, because the reason I started refining the way I speak about it is because some critics were saying that there are 40 million black people and less than 2 million, well, even less than that, less than 1.5 million are possibly in prison or in jail. So it's not mass. If it was mass, it'd be half. It'd be about 20 million. And so they was using that argument. But then if we want to look at it in a historical and I think legally correct way, that we should discard mass incarceration, call it slavery. It's a continuation of slavery connected to the and before her film, there was another major documentary called Slavery by Another Name. I forget the man's name who wrote the book, and it was turned into a PBS documentary. So I think that because I do use media as a weapon in educating, as well as radicalizing people who come across our different expressions of media, it is to just call it what it is. It's slavery. It's a the 13th says slavery shall be slavery and involuntary servitude shall be abolished except for punishment for a crime where other person has been duly convicted. And so all the criminal justice issues that we rightly point out, how it has been racialized and people based on their skin color criminalized, and but their goal is slavery. Slavery remains a main pillar and employer in this country. So just that quick suggestion. Another quick note why it's also important to interview people like Ramona Africa. She's the sole survivor of a terrorist attack. I just did an interview Tuesday. I'm about Mr. John DeSantis, writing about the Thibodaux, Louisiana massacre. Some reports have up to 300 black people killed who were protesting against horrid conditions, more slave-like conditions, but they were quote-unquote free, and up to 300 may have been murdered. He said in his book he could document 69, but also tells the story of a black U.S. Civil War veteran, was a former slave, survived the war, came back there only to become victim of this mass shooting of these white people, on black people who were trying to fight for fair wages, quote unquote. All right, so that's why it's important. Your document, she is a survivor, a victim, and the only reason we have his testimony, Jack Conrad, or John Conrad was his name, was because he was a veteran. And he reported his wounds and gave testimony how he received those wounds. I think he survived 2 gunshot wounds. So what y'all doing in recording for posterity of the victims of these terrorist attacks like Ramona Africa is very important. I didn't mean to be long-winded, but I think that is very important, and people should know that, and they should support your media endeavors. So thank you again, and I hope that you will send us any information you would like us to distribute through our various networks or any upcoming inside the activist studios.
Can I make just quickly 2 important points?
Yes, ma'am.
Before we go? Yeah, so just quickly again, I just want to reiterate how important it is to have people come out to this event and have a packed house, especially during the times that we're living in with President-elect Trump. We need a revolutionary narrative more so now than ever. The second point is just to direct people's attention quickly to an event that's actually taking place this Sunday in New York City at Decolonize This Space. It will essentially touch upon the occupied space of Palestine and connect that to the occupied space of the Bronx with the Bronx 120 case, where 120 young men were swept up this past April in a so-called gang raid sweep. So that event will take place this Sunday at 6 p.m. and it will feature Josmar Trujillo and Johanna Fernandez. And that is being conducted by New York Students for Justice in Palestine. And the event is called Right to Resist, the Movement Against Empire in the Trump Era. And I can send you more information on that for you to distribute to your networks, but thank you so much for allowing me to speak more on these issues, for us to promote our events of Inside the Activist Studio, and just to get to know you a bit more and talk about the issues that are truly affecting our society at the current moment.
Well, thank you, Ms. Williams, and you stay safe behind these enemy lines.
I sure will. You do the same, brother.
Good day.
Good day. Bye-bye.
All right, we certainly want to thank Ms. Williams for that interview. Also want to thank our intern, Tag, for connecting us with her. Great job, great interview, I think it was, although I may be a little bit biased. But we need people out there to do this work, and it's just important also that we inspire others to become activists, as Ms. Williams said. So, going to take a break, play some message music, come back with some news of the day. Again, this is a broadcast on this Friday afternoon following the day of mourning, November 25th, 2016. We'll come back with some of the news of the day. Tonight's programming, live programming for tonight, I'm not sure of. I do not, Tando Radio Show will not be on, but I'm not sure about Race Treaty. I heard from Brother Onaje. He said he was going to get back to me or whether or not he was going to be in a place where he could do a broadcast. And I also haven't heard from Brother Robin. So I will post any changes to that if I hear about them through our social media. You can follow us on Twitter at Black Talk Radio or Facebook, BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com. And, of course, our new social media home behind these enemy lines is BTRCommunity.com. Again, check out those events, especially if you are in the New York area. Again, that will be December the 6th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Schomburg Center for Research in Black Culture. Inside the Activist Studio, we'll be interviewing MOVE member and sole survivor of the 1985 MOVE bombing by the U.S. government, the Philadelphia government, the police, and the firefighters stood around and let it burn. That's why they say, that's why the title is Let the Fire Burn. This was just in 1985. Wasn't 1885. Wasn't 1785. This was 1985, people. So don't be going to sleep and thinking that things are so much better, as some of these proxies will tell you, because if they're not, they may be for some of us, but for the vast majority of us, no.
Of mass incarceration, it's the worst in the nation. Kids can't go to school without having the 5-0 waiting. Pat you down, turn you around, take off your shoes, walk through a metal detector. Stories you never hear on your nightly news. Then go to a teacher that has reached tenure. They ain't worried about your kids, shit, they just waiting on dinner. But they splurge money on the splendor of all these sports, right? No child left behind, although they cannot read nor write. Peep the lessons. If the kids don't have the vernacular to express themselves, all they have to fall back on is aggression. The power of literacy is literally the keys of freedom. But the school system don't feed them, they just oversee them. There's a zero tolerance pipeline to the 13th Amendment. Slavery is abolished unless your child is convicted. But another problem that arises when it comes to stopping this, the buildings are empty when it's time for these teacher conferences. We ain't revolutionary, we are reactionary when it comes down to our seeds. And that shit is very scary. My mom used to pop in my class and know I couldn't stand it. But due to our accountability, it's the reason why I'm still standing. Listen, the high school officer said that I fit the description. Although my nose was always clean, but I figured out they mission. They put me in dumber classes, though my record was proven. 11th grade and 9th grade classes is what I was consumed in. Speaking of consumption, prison food has more nutrition than the school lunches. Eating food like substances make it hard for us to think. The pipeline is deep from the food to what they teach. Time to rise up, y'all.
Cause for real, the mind is a terrible thing to waste. And all y'all high class niggas with y'all nose up, cause we dropping this shit on this joint. Fuck y'all, we gon' speak for ourselves. Know what I'm saying? Cause see, the schools ain't teaching us nothing. They ain't teaching us nothing but how to be slaves and hard workers for white people.
hustle. Why is they exploiting us? You know what I'm saying? And they ain't teaching us nothing related to solving our own problems. You know what I'm saying? They ain't teaching us how to get crack out the ghetto. They ain't teaching us how to stop the police from murdering us and brutalizing us. They ain't teaching us how to get our rent paid. You know what I'm saying? They ain't teaching our families how to interact better with each other. You know what I'm saying? They just teaching us how to build a shit up. You know what I'm saying? That's why my niggas got a problem with the shit. That's why niggas be dropping out that shit, cause it don't relate. You go to school and the fucking police searching you. A military compound, you know what I'm saying? So school ain't gonna relate us until we have some shit where we control the fucking school system. Where it reflect how we gonna solve our own problems, then niggas ain't gonna relate to school. Shit, that's just how it is, you know what I'm saying? And I love education, you know what I'm saying? But if education ain't elevating me, and you know what I'm saying, it ain't taking me where I need to go out some bullshit, then fuck education, you know what I'm saying? At least they shit. Matter of fact, my nigga, this whole school system could suck my dick. Bitch!
You be scared. I ain't scared. I ain't scared. Because white folks love you when you're scared. There's only two kind of black people in America today. You either running free or you running scared.
The black murders, black murders, they the new slaves, we the new Nat Turners. Nat Turners. No bodyguards, no entourage. We them sin kid niggas taking the Amistad bomber clock. We need to fast like Ramadan. The industry's a bunch of fake heroes like Comic Con. Behind that mask, you Robert Downey Jr. My Shiro's got a 2 million bounty on the future. Matulu's locked in San Bernardino County as a shooter. You some go along, get along, how we all neutered. I'm a upper thumbkin trooper, my troop scars, you gon' need them, and upper thumb suture. Don't let these new Steven ass niggas recruit ya, cause when Miss Short Candy gets tired, he gon' mute ya. And I ain't Django either, I ain't waiting for no white man to come and give me my freedom. I won't join them out, beat them, leave them rotten in the hot sun. Rock them with the shotgun, shot her, I'm the top one. Tell the core in the box them, eulogize then drop them. If the choice is freedom or death, then what's the option? Y'all them RG3 niggas, smiling at the camera, them happy that y'all can please niggas. I'm Barack Bufon's worth as a Marine nigga, deep like the mind of Farrakhan, I'm on my dean nigga. That's why I never believe niggas. Oh, you got them Instagrams, how come we never see pictures? Then claim God but never read scriptures, so we worship fame because a celebrity's richer. So Jesus becomes Jesus, then I guess Kim Kardashian is Mary Magdalene. And all her sins are cleansed through the camera lens. But then again, maybe I'm just rambling. Line up these industry CEOs and let me battle them. Show Jimmy Iovine the crime scene with his headless brethren and tell him sign these. And when I hear sirens, disconnect his neck from his spine clean. The difference my spitting is the equivalent of using your high themes. All I want is you and your mind free, the time needs. Way more than a nice beat and a rhyme scheme, cause all that bitch whoop y'all talking don't fertilize seeds. I heard it takes two chains to make a slave, one on your physical frame and one on your brain. And once they got your mental enslaved, it runs like a train. So what are you really saying when you claim you stuck in the game? See, they create corporations cause they never wanted fame. So the nigga that you see is the nigga that's underpaid. Damn, just another slave. I'm John Jacques Dessalines. I swing him up with a blade. X, X, X.
This is Ron Hayes with Hood News, and you're listening to the Black Talk Radio Network. Stay tuned.
And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Scotty Reed on this broadcast from behind these enemy lines. On this Friday afternoon, feel kind of lonely because there will be no more live broadcasting. And I'm so used to engineering programs on Friday nights. So I'm feeling kind of lonely. Plus the family's out visiting with other family. We got family in from Florida, family in from Detroit, family in from Maryland. So family from all over. So I'm in the broadcast studios by myself. My grandson's not even here. He wanted to go stay with his father, which is a good thing. All right, so the phone lines are open. I'm just going to go over some of the news items of the day. There are some other political prisoner news that you can find in btrcommunity.com. We have a group there, Political Prisoners and Prisoners of War. I posted a couple of events. I think some other people posted a couple of events. Maybe we can get those on the air. But the telephone number, if you have a question or comment, hopefully y'all ain't sleep out there after, you know, still munching on them turkey leftovers. But the telephone number is 866-510-9025. That is 866-510-9025. If you are in the North Carolina area, or alternative number is 704-802-5056. That's 704-802-5056. Our international audience, they probably sleep after they crashed the website last night. Shout out to, again, our media partners out there that made the African outreach possible. We'll be starting up a new campaign when I get off the airwaves, as I prepare the report for the campaign to Ghana that just wrapped up. So look out for that. To all our media partners, to become a media partner, by the way, since I'm speaking of media partners, there is a graphic on our website on every page, just about, except for the station profile pages of the different independent stations and podcasts. But you can donate and become a partner by giving any amount, and you can do that online, or you can send a check or money order to Black Talk Media Project, P.O. Box 65, Mount Holly, North Carolina, 28120. Please, whether you're doing it online, I don't know if PayPal allows you to change the email report, but send us an email if you make a donation and you want to change the email to where it goes. Because you may not want it coming on your job, these emails from this radical black media coming to your job, your work email and stuff. So send me a email. You can send it a number of ways, blacktalkradiobaby@gmail.com or through the websites. And let me know what that alternative email is. And make sure that your emails still work, because some of the reports we try to send out bounce back. It's not a whole lot, but maybe two or three. So I want to make sure that you're getting those reports so you can see your return on investment in public black media. So again, I want to thank again Ms. Sophia Williams, the self-affirming radical black activist who is with the campaign to bring Momia home, for her participation in counter racism and countering the system that is practicing slavery, has been since and before its inception. Her work on behalf of our political prisoners. Oh, by the way, I forgot, new system. Anytime you want to chime in during our open line sessions, just hit **. If I don't see you, say or something like that and let me know, or just say hello Mr. Reed, as some people call me, like I'm 70 years old or something. But I appreciate, because I say sir, ma'am, and that's a good thing. So let's go to some of this political prisoners and prisoners of war information, get that out to you. Oh, I know what I wanted to do again. Thanking Ms. Sophia Williams. But let's hear some of the news reports. Again, this was a crime against humanity. Again, Ramona Africa is the sole survivor of this bombing that killed children, pets. We don't hear PETA marking its anniversary when the FBI, the Philadelphia police, Frank Rizzo, and all them criminal thugs dropped a bomb from a helicopter, C4 supplied by the federal government, and dropped it on this compound. It then went on to burn, I can't recall from memory how many houses, but it was like, you know, in some cities and urban areas, houses like when we lived in Detroit, you might have 8 feet, if that, between houses. And then these are wooden homes, too, and just burnt down all the in a black neighborhood. They didn't care. Just burnt down the whole doggone neighborhood to assassinate these people. It's a political assassination, act of terrorism. So let's give a listen. This was posted in Political Prisoners and Prisoners of War in our social media community, which you can find at btrcommunity.com. So let's give a listen to this. And one note, this is pretty long. It's about 30 minutes. Maybe we'll listen to 15 minutes just to give people some background. Another source besides me telling you these things happen.
Thirty years ago, the Philadelphia Police Department carried out one of the greatest acts of police terror in U.S. history, right where I'm standing. The target was an organization called MOVE, nearly all-black revolutionary group. On May 13, 1985, police set an example for all radicals nationwide by bombing the MOVE home, full of innocent men, women, and children, trapping them so that 11 people burned alive. I sat down with the only adult survivor of the MOVE bombing, Ramona Africa, to hear her story, one of the hidden people's histories of life in American empire. The MOVE organization.
I have a quick correction to make on this podcast / broadcast. I forgot about Birdie. He was the child survivor. So it was only two survivors. So it was incorrect for me to say Ramona Africa was the sole survivor, because she was not.
Organization was born in Philadelphia during a time of revolt. People of all nationalities were joining revolutionary groups and challenging the core structures of empire: war, racism, and inequality. In the tradition of the 1950s civil rights struggle, armed self-defense against police and vigilante terror was also taken up by oppressed groups in the 60s and 70s. It was also a time of severe political repression, with wanton police brutality and COINTELPRO employed against black radicals. Led by founder John Africa, MOVE's philosophy was to challenge the abuse of all forms of life, including animals and nature, and held regular nonviolent protests confronting everything from Dow Chemical to the Ringling Brothers Circus. Under their philosophy of back-to-nature communalism, they liberally grew their hair and didn't conform to societal norms. Composting, caring for stray animals, and living without technology made them the target of ridicule and violence. They were called dirty hippies, cultists, and dangerous terrorists by the media. But despite the smear campaign, many were inspired by MOVE's message, commitment, and actions. Ramona Africa tells the story of how she joined the group.
I start seeing the contradictions, the paradoxes, the lies, because at the time I met MOVE, I was a student my last year at Temple University. I had planned to go to law school. I had studied a pre-law curriculum. I had a bachelor's degree and an associate's degree. And that's where I was headed. And then I met MOVE. Pam Africa, who was a supporter then, she started talking to me about going over to City Hall to the MOVE hearings that were going on and seeing for myself exactly what happens, what's going on in those courtrooms. And I did. I went. I was shocked and shaken. I could not believe what I was seeing in that courtroom. Nothing that I read in those textbooks that I was given to read at Temple University, nothing that those professors told me at Temple University. None of that was going on in that courtroom. I saw the blatant railroad, the obvious racism that was going on, the obvious frame-up. On the other hand, I saw a group of revolutionaries, and I saw them uncompromising, saw them representing themselves, cross-examining prosecution witnesses and exposing the lies and contradictions of these witnesses. I saw that they were not intimidated at all.
At the Move 9 trial, Ramona was charged with contempt of court for clapping by Judge Lynn Abraham. She was sentenced to 60 days in jail.
Well, I tell everybody, I owe her a thank you note, because she sent me to the county jail for 2 months up close and personal with Move women. When I walked out of that prison after those 2 months, there was no turning back. Law school was out of the picture. I did not want to be like the judge, the prosecuting attorneys, or even the so-called defense attorneys. I wanted to be like Move.
Ramona was witnessing the trial of members known as the Move Nine. The history of why they were being sent to jail gives the essence of the relationship between the police and Move. The political climate in Philadelphia was impacted by social change across the country. Education reform that brought affirmative action was met with fierce reaction from racists. It propelled figures like notorious crooked cop Frank Rizzo to positions of power. His claim to fame was leading an ultra-violent police riot against peaceful students in 1967, who were demonstrating in favor of black studies classes, where he ordered cops to, quote, get their black asses. As police commissioner, he proudly evoked lynching while ordering raids on Black Panther offices, saying to a reporter, the Black Panthers should be strung up. His qualifications made him a star to the racist white sectors of Philadelphia. Openly campaigning on so-called white rights, he became mayor in 1971. One of his campaign slogans was Vote White. The dual hatred of both African Americans and progressives made Move an obsession for the mayor and his ilk. Move members became a target of regular harassment and physical attacks by Rizzo's cops. Their abuse reached unspeakable heights. Between 1974 and 1975, three different Move women reported miscarriages after police beat them in their pregnant stomachs. In a police attack in 1976, Janina Africa's three-week-old child life was crushed by police. As Mamia Abu-Jamal reported, non-Move eyewitnesses saw police club Janine while she clutched her infant baby. In response to these vicious attacks, Move grew increasingly militant, upholding the philosophy of self-defense. But Rizzo and his gang weren't satisfied with random beatings. They didn't want an organized group of empowered black radicals that could criticize the police and fight back against their abuse to exist at all. For the good of the empire, all of COINTELPRO's hard work had to be honored. In 1977, escalating attacks led to members brandishing guns outside their home, declaring, "We will no longer be beaten and intimidated by police." 24-hour surveillance and positioning of attack squads and checkpoints surrounding the Move house began. But as the group remained defiant, the heavy-handed lockdown became an embarrassing 15-month quagmire for Rizzo.
The police will be in there to drag them out by the backs of their necks. They're going to be taken by force if they resist. No question about that. Children or not.
In March 1978, the police increased tensions by blockading food, water, and gas from the home and ordering journalists to leave the area. Move negotiated a deal with the city to move to a new location. But, as if Rizzo didn't want a peaceful resolution, he changed the terms of Move's deal with the city and obtained a rush warrant. On August 8, 1978, the attack began. Knowing there were many children inside, police started bulldozing the home, while the fire department shot water cannons. They were flanked by hundreds of police officers with assault rifles.
Gunfire.
Eventually, there was a barrage of gunfire. Philadelphia police say their shooting was set off by shots coming from the house. But several witnesses assert the first shots were directed at the house, including two reporters at the scene. Cops testified they unloaded their assault rifles into the moved basement, where they could hear women and children crying. In the unhinged flurry of bullets, Officer James Ramp was shot and killed. And in the face of certain death, Move surrendered. When unarmed Delbert Africa came out, the Philadelphia police showed everything you need to know about their claims of upholding the law that day.
He's hitting them, he's hitting them. Hitting them on the head. Kicking them on the head. I have no idea, I just couldn't see.
Shut up! You make a mistake
though,
that's your ass, they are.
So,
all right, I'm going to stop it there, and I'm going to change my mind and play the entire clip. It's 30 minutes, but break it up. Give people an opportunity to make any comments or ask any questions that they have. But one mental note that I made, when they mentioned how they cleared the reporters out, the first thing that came to my mind was Ferguson. And shout out to all of those people who had the courage to live stream it to the rest of the world through the internet. See, we can use the tool of the internet. We can document things for ourselves because they cleared the journalists out before they attacked. And that's how it went down in Ferguson. Let's also not forget that the federal government, the branch, the executive branch, under the control of CEO Obama, declared a no-fly zone. They didn't even want news helicopters in the air before they launched their assault on Ferguson. So, again, their tactics don't really change that much tactically in their mistreatment of black people, and just watch how non-white people in general will really be will be seeing this type of mistreatment going on as they try to sort out who's here quote unquote legally and who's here illegally, you know, quote unquote. So we are going to take a station identification break, and then we'll be back on the other side. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I broadcast every Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday when I'm able at 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. Check out some of the other great programming on the station, independent black radio stations and podcasts you can find at our home, blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Suffering a broken jaw and fractured eye socket, Delbert's beating became known as one of the worst incidents of police brutality ever recorded. The police then went on a rampage throughout the entire poor, mostly black community.
I was upstairs in my bedroom, trying to change my clothes. And here come all these people, all these cops. They're chasing me there with the nightsticks, hitting them all on the shoulders and stuff. It's about supposed to be up there already hurt.
See, they over there smiling and that there.
See how they smiling?
Yeah.
You see how they smiling?
Yeah. Community. I feel that, you know, they mad or what went down and they not satisfied or just, you know, getting the move. They want, like, all the people, like, not only this community, but the whole community, like, in the black community. It's the hatred that they have and the mentality for, you know, black people.
The move house was completely demolished the same day. Community protests denounced the police attack. Despite no evidence that the bullet came from the house, 9 MOVE members were convicted for the shooting, all given 30 to 100-year prison sentences. Temple University professor who documented the incident, Lynn Washington, stated, "The police department knows who killed Officer Ramp. It was another police officer. They have fairly substantial evidence that it was a mistake. I got this from a number of different sources in the police department." Protests eventually forced the indictment of the 3 officers for the infamous beating of Delbert Africa. Police hatred of MOVE peaked.
And the head of the police union gave his thoughts on those who beat Delbert Africa.
What they should have done is shot that goddamn bum, and then there would have been no trouble today.
All 3 cops were acquitted. But MOVE didn't stop speaking out. The reign of arch-racist Rizzo ended in 1980, but deep-seated hatred of MOVE meant they would never leave the crosshairs of the Boys in Blue. Still, with no crimes to justify the removal of the MOVE family, the final confrontation started with a knock at the door.
A plainclothes cop, I can't remember exactly who it was, a man, walks up our front steps, knocks on the door. Me and my sister Teresa Africa, who was killed in the bombing. We come out and we stand out there talking to this cop and him talking to us for at least an hour, at least. And when we were done, he just walked away, you know, he left. What we found out was that they had practiced, rehearsed, planned for over a year their attack on MOVE, their plan to exterminate MOVE, kill MOVE off. They thought they had a workable plan and they needed a reason to execute it. And there was nothing. So they ended up using that non-incident on April 29th, 2 weeks earlier, as their excuse to come at MOVE.
On Mother's Day, 500 cops flooded into the neighborhood and barricaded the streets, readying for their one-sided war. People living in proximity to MOVE were told to evacuate for 24 hours.
They tried to convince people that they came out there because neighbors had complaints about us. When did this government in this country ever care about black folks complaining about their neighbors? Since when? When did they ever care about black folks complaining about anything? Anything? They don't. They never did. That was not the issue. The issue was really and is still our unrelenting fight for our MOVE family members, known as the MOVE 9, and they could not answer the questions that people were putting to them. And that is why they were feeling so much heat from MOVE, you know? And that is why they wanted to shut us up permanently, in the words of Wilson Good, then mayor, first black mayor of Philadelphia, that he wanted a permanent end to MOVE.
You were the only adult survivor of the MOVE bombing on that day, Ramona. Can you walk us through your experience?
One thing that people should know is that on that day, on Mother's Day, Sunday morning, one of our supporters was going food shopping, and she contacted us to ask if we needed her to get anything for us. And we said yes. So she came by to pick up the list and the money. Our children, some of our children, wanted to go with her. So they did. When she left, was nothing really happening. When she came back, the police had put a wooden barricade at the top of Osage Avenue. It's a small one-way street. She pulls up and she's like, what's going on? You know, the police had us under surveillance for years before 85, for years. And so they were always parked up on the corner, you know, at the other end of the street on Cobbs Creek Parkway. They were always parked out there surveilling us. And so this one particular cop, black cop named George Draper, walks over to Gloria's car, looks in. He knows Gloria. I mean, she's been around for years. He knows her. He knows our kids, have seen them for years. He goes and moves the barricade to let Gloria drive back onto our street with our kids. Now, at this point, he knows what they're planning to do. That's why they had the barricade across the street, because they were setting up and moving cars off the street, this kind of thing. Moved the barricade and let Gloria. He knew Gloria wasn't going to stay at our house, but he knew our kids lived there. Now, later on, Wilson Good says that he gave the police commissioner and police officers orders that if they could remove our kids without a confrontation, you know, then they should remove the kids. They didn't. He let them right back on the street, right back into our house. Nothing happened all day. And that night, though, Gregory Sambor, the police commissioner, he gets on the loudspeaker and says, attention, move. This is America. You have to abide by the laws and something of American society and blah, blah, blah. And said we had 15 minutes to come out. So we did not come out. And the first mode of attack against us was the fire department. Four deluge hoses. We were in the basement. The water was just pouring down on us. I mean, pouring down on us.
When flooding the house didn't work, police launched their next phase of attack.
Then the police, they put smoke, tear gas, and it started spreading through the house. But in order to put the tear gas in our house, what they did was they used explosives. They claimed they wanted to put 3-inch holes in the party walls on either side of our home to insert tear gas. When they finished using those explosives that were supposed to put 3-inch holes in the wall, they had blown our whole front porch off. I mean, the whole front of our house was blown away, so it was wide open. So when that didn't drive us out of our home, they started shooting. According to their estimates, and you can take that with a grain of salt and scale it up, they shot over 10,000 rounds of bullets in on us within the first 90 minutes. They had to send to their arsenal for more bullets, for more bullets. It was only a handful of us in that house, 6 children in that house. When I say they shot over 10,000 rounds of bullets, they had their sidearms, they had M16 rifles, they had shotguns, they had sniper rifles with silencers on them. they had M60 automatic rifles.
The police say the first shots were automatic gunfire from the move house, yet the only automatic weapons ever found belonged to the police. Shockingly, they brought more than just M60 machine guns and enough ammo to kill a small city. They had bombs, too. Hovering in a police helicopter 6 feet over the move home, Lieutenant Frank Powell, with the official approval of Mayor Good and Police Commissioner Greg Samber, lit 2 pounds of C4 explosives and threw the bomb onto Move's roof.
This 5:27 p.m., state police helicopter drops it. There is the explosion.
The act of terror was long planned. An internal FBI letter confirms the agency personally delivered 30 blocks of C4 to the Philadelphia police for the assault.
When you guys were in the basement, did you hear them announce anything before the bombing?
No, I didn't. But like I said, it wouldn't have made a difference because we knew, we were very, very clear on the fact that they were not out there to arrest anybody. They had plenty of opportunity to arrest us if that was their aim. But it wasn't. It wasn't. Their aim was to kill.
All right, we're back. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News on the Black Talk Radio Network. Scotty Reed in on this broadcast with another example of why I say I'm behind enemy lines. Wow. I learned something from that right there. Wow. Things I did not know. I trained with M16s. I got like an expert rating, little badge or whatnot in my record for M16. I didn't know that the police, supposed to be civilian police force. See, this is why I say that these are race soldiers. These are soldiers, as other people have called them. These are soldiers. I call them slave catchers, but they're soldiers too, because they definitely got a soldier's gear. M60s, come on. That's probably all that surplus left over from the Vietnam War. The same thing where we were talking about today, history repeating itself or their tactics never change. I bet you that's what they did with all of that weaponry that was made to kill non-white people in Vietnam, drafting victims over here, making them kill victims over there. So you got all of this surplus military that you then made some arms manufacturer rich with a fat government contract, and you got all this surplus and you gave it to the police to wage war. Seems I remember H. Rap Brown saying something about after the man gets through waging war in Vietnam, he's going to wage war here. Again, 1985, this was when 1985, I was out of high school. I was working. I was probably about 18, 19 years old. I did not hear this come on the news, and we watched the local news, but this was not on the local news coming out of Charlotte or Gastonia, or I did not read about it in the paper. Nobody said it. As far as I knew, this did not happen until the internet. Until I became a radical activist and started seeking out this type of information. I'm just sitting here just appalled. So I was, and I bet you what, many of them cracker cops probably had not long just came back from Vietnam. Many of them by that time had been police officers, maybe 10 years out of Vietnam. When did Vietnam end? 1972 officially ended somewhere around 1972, 1972. So we're talking about just 13 years later. Who knows how many non-white people they gunned down in Vietnam with these very same weapons, probably. I'm just appalled. Seems that it was intuitive, even though at that time when I was, 20? I joined the military when I was 20. Turned 21 in the military. Then witnessing the LA rebellion on television, sitting in the barracks, Schofield Barracks, Hawaii, with about four other black people also in the military, not realizing what we had joined and our participation in upholding global racism and white supremacy by the Bureau of Guns. And I asked the question, I've told this story many a times and I'll keep telling it. And I asked my fellow soldiers, who at this point had become friends, that they deployed us to Los Angeles, gave us live rounds and told us to fire on our people, would we do it? Or would you, I'm serious, I said this, would you turn that on whoever gave that illegal order? Because these are supposed to be American citizens, right? And our oath is to the Constitution and protecting the citizens of the empire, right? I didn't call it empire, but yeah. But you see what these crackers do. What's the lesson to be learned from this? That they don't view black people as citizens. They are not honoring whatever it was amendment in their constitution that granted formerly enslaved Africans so-called citizenship, cause which is a fraud. They're trying to act like there weren't citizens who were non-white in any of the colonies, like they didn't fight in the Revolutionary War and were considered citizens. Look at the Constitution of Massachusetts. I think it was Paul Coffey is the reason that black men is the reason that in their constitution it said all citizens, and I think it even used language specifically mentioning quote unquote African Americans and Indians, that they had the right to vote because they were citizens, they were being taxed. So that amendment that they passed off after the Civil War, many people cite that as how these people, again, we keep letting them lie to us and think that the majority of us black people here, African descended people, got here through slavery, and that's a lie. Again, 1850 census, 500,000 estimated quote unquote free black people still suffering under racial white terrorism and can be kidnapped at any time into slavery, but no doubt on still considered in the census as being free. What are some of the things that I made note of? 500. They said 500 cops, right? No, 500 troops. That's darn doggone near a battalion. Correct me if I'm wrong. That could be considered a battalion, speaking in military terms. I was part of the 86th battalion. About 500 to 800 troops. I think 800 is the cutoff. I could be wrong, not remembering correctly, but 500 troops. That's a lot. That's almost a, you know, half of 1,000. Maybe 300 away from being a battalion of soldiers. Another, again, this is 1985. I was long not out of high school. Another mental note I made, black people prepare. Got Christmas coming up. You're going to be spending all this money like you spent yesterday. Again, I'm not criticizing anybody, but you're looking about a gift for someone, buy some guns and ammo. Mayor Wilson Good, proxy racist, done under the cover of blackness. This crime against black humanity was done under the cover of Wilson Good. And what were some of the things that they said? This is supposed to be a black mayor, right? Probably got elected because of quote unquote black people, and he turned out to be a proxy racist too. But he wanted a end to move. Let's end it. Call him for the extermination. This is why no war, speaking of military, this is why in no war, soldiers cannot differentiate by skin color. All right. All throughout history, white people have used non-white people, recruited them, trained them in their armies, and put them out there to be cannon fodder. Allow some of them to move up and be showcased with stars on their bars and what have you. But no doubt should come about that these people are tools of the system. I was one of them. I can speak to that from experience. But these proxy racists have always been a tool. I mean, this is just going, if we can even talk ancient warfare, you don't think those people were bribing people and getting them to betray their city? They belong to like one of the ancient city states, betrayed it. In fact, we probably have heard stories or you know, historians talk about the betrayal. They always do this, man. Pit non-white groups against each other like they did the Indians, the ones that was left after the plague, after the 100 million wiped out by the plague. Then they also used formerly enslaved Africans, recruited, trained them in the army to go exterminate the rest of the indigenous people here. Oh, man. Racism's a problem. To solve it, we must promote to black people and all people, but black people primarily, not to participate. Even if that means quitting a job, ending a career, divesting your stocks, kidnapping black children, she talked about them coming to take the children away, that kind of stuff still going on. Throwing them, they throw children into slavery too. And I have heard some reports and some horror stories, even from here in North Carolina, where they found a boy, adopted boy, he living with a social worker, and she had like a supervisor position. She had other social workers under her. And somebody called the police, and the police came because there was a boy chained to the front porch with a dead chicken around his neck. I kid you not. I know that sound country as heck, and it's not funny. It sound country as heck, but look it up. Look up something like adopted boy or little boy found with dead chicken around his neck chained to the porch in North Carolina. Look it up. I kid you not. I have no reason to lie to you. So that's a form of slavery too. People get these children, get a check from the government, supposed to be for the children's welfare, but obviously it is not in these cases. We heard the cop or the commissioner talk about this is America, law and order. Not this is America, the land of opportunity and freedom. Not this is the land of liberty. Injustice. No, this is land of law and order. We're hearing these same phrases being uttered now by President elect. Well, he's been uttering them, President elect Donald Trump, who will be your next CEO of USA Inc., barring some drastic change of events. got to be prepared. This is not to scare anyone. These are just simply battlefield reports. I'm trying to connect the dots of history to make you see how much progress, because we got people out there talking about, look at how much progress we've made since the 60s. You got the proxy racist slaver sheriff up there in Wisconsin over Milwaukee County. He's one of them law and order guys trying to get a position as Homeland Security. So people, it's not to scare you, but it's to make you aware so that you can prepare. But again, no, they don't never talk about laying it. No, that's all a show. That's showcasing that patriotism and all of that, what they project to the world through their propaganda. This is the land of freedom and opportunity. Anybody can make it. Bring us your tired, your poor, your weak. We'll subsidize them with special laws that'll exempt them from paying taxes and give them some loans if they are from desired populations. We got to keep that racial hierarchy, you know. Oh, Lordy. And lastly, firefighters participating in the murder of quote-unquote U.S. citizens. Of course, obviously, they weren't being treated as citizens. They were being treated as non-citizens, being treated as slaves. Slaves that did not willingly want to go to the slave plantation, also knowing that if they came out that door, and it's been documented, they know that their perception of things were correct, because we know there was a plan to exterminate them so they didn't come out the door so that these people could shoot them down. Remember, these are people with M16 silencers. I made a mental note, I didn't write this one down. The cop that was killed, the trajectory of the bullet came from quite a few feet above, as if fired from a building with the snipers, with the, what did we hear? Silencers, right? But the firefighters, every September the 11th, especially through the football games and the ball games and what have you, the propaganda through the news channels and the media, the movies that they'll play, probably showing something with Kiefer Sutherland starring in it. But the firefighters, we honor them and we act like they're out here saving everybody. And they're I just saw a news story about a firefighter setting fires that turned into a major fire. I think it was in the mountains of North Carolina, I'm not sure. Arsonists hang, in among the ranks. But these are firefighters committing murder. So we know it was quote unquote 500 police officers. Now I don't know if they were all Philadelphia. I'm sure some state troopers were brought in. The National Guard wasn't brought in. Should have been called out to protect and uphold the Constitution and stop all this violence and, you know, what is going on, man? What are y'all about to do? A battalion of cops with M60s, M16s, probably some grenade launchers, had 203s on them like I carried. No, didn't nobody have a grenade launcher. That's why they dropped that C4 they got from the government. So the government was involved. Again, I'm just sitting here shocked that they was able to keep this from me. But it's not hard, because there are people making decisions what news get reported on your regional news stations. So that's why you tune in to ABC with David Muir or any of these showcase white people, especially. Now we got the cable channel, so you tune into them for some international and some national news. Well, guess what? You ain't going to get the truth. You're going to get a script. just sad, and it's sickening. And I'm willing to bet you that some of these criminals are still alive, probably retired somewhere down in Florida or wherever, retired collecting their city pensions. And these are unindicted criminals who should be put on trial for war crimes. Crimes against humanity. They should be brought up on charges in the International Criminal Court, which the United States, in principle, has agreed to, but refuses to implement, like most of the human rights treaties throughout the United States. I need to take a station identification break. But before I do so, if you have any questions, any comments, any insights, anything you want to share, hit us up at 866-510-9025. That's the toll-free U.S. and Canada, except for Hawaii and Alaska. I don't know why y'all had to ask Uber Conference that. Or you can call us at 704-802-5056. Also have international numbers, or you can dial in by computer at uberconference.com/Black Talk Radio Network. We'll be back on the other side. I think we've heard enough. Please check out the episode. Well, I don't think I heard when it was going to come out. It's going to be taped December the 6th. The interview of Ramona Africa inside the activist studio, again, 6 o'clock p.m. to 8 o'clock p.m. at the Schomburg Center for Research in Black Culture, New York Public Library. That's 515 Malcolm X Boulevard, New York, New York. So make sure y'all turn out for that. If you're in the local area, show your support for this victim, and also support inside the activist studio. We need as much anti-racism, counter-racism propaganda being created as possible. This is Scotty Reed broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. Take a short break, and then we'll come back.
Tell her I'm the face of the faceless. Troy Davis. Only we can save us. Slave plantation still never paid us. Neighborhood watchman, really your nosy neighbor. Smile in your face, but really you know they hate us. We the most hated, we the most imitated, we the most incarcerated, most underestimated. Murder trade fine, my feelings is frustrated. Feeling agitated, my anger is aggravated. If you ain't up on things, Malcolm X, Huey Newton, yo, I'm telling you, man, evidence is crystal clear, yo, it's part of their plan. It's a war on black males, wanna kill a black man. All these undercover racists like George Zimmerman, fake neighborhood watchmen, playing trigger man. All these undercover racists like George Zimmerman, fake neighborhood watchmen, playing trigger man. Back to the basics, land of the racist, George Zimmerman, Rush Limbaugh, patriot, playing hood on, we can still see your faces. Sean Donatella, I'm the face of the faceless. Back to the basics, land of the racist, George Zimmerman, Rush Limbaugh, patriot, playing hood on, we can still see your faces. Sean Donatella, I'm the face of the faceless. Got a little message for Geraldo Rivera. You ain't Caucasian, homie, look in the mirror. Got you brainwashed with makeup and mascara. Send some real essays that'll make you see clearer. My blacks and Latinos, Muslims, Arabs, Fox News tell it, yo, they say we all terrorists. Good old boy isn't racism because they scared of us. Cure racism, psychoanalyze a therapist. If you ain't up on things, I'm the glitch in the matrix, we training your brain. All this black on black hatred is really insane. Stop fighting one another, can't you see we all the same? We all feel the pain, the hatred and racism. Too many black males either dead or in prison. Divide and they conquer with their willy lynchism. Stop killing one another, respect the black woman. Back to the basics, land of the racist, George Zimmerman, Rush Limbaugh, hatred, playing hood on, we can still see your faces. Sean Donatella, I'm the face of the faceless. Back to the basics, land of the racist, George Zimmerman, Rush Limbaugh, hatred, playing hood on, we can still see your faces. Sean Donatella, I'm the face of the faceless. Trayvon, Sean Bell, Oscar Grant, Emmett Till. Ain't no justice, it's just us. If you stand for nothing, you are nothing. You gotta still fight for ours. The struggle continues. Sean Donatella. Rest in peace to all my fallen soldiers. We out.
And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. We got about 15 minutes left in the broadcast, and I assume that's going to conclude today's live streaming on this Friday evening. Do appreciate all those who helped make this possible, and all those who share the media. That is what we produce it for. We don't just want it to sit on the website. We need to share this. There's a lot of great content being produced by independent-minded black people, and it's good that people are sharing it. We'll continue with our marketing efforts, but you can help us by sharing some of your favorite podcasts at blacktalkradionetwork.com. Political prisoner event. I mentioned earlier there was a petition. Let me pull it up. It's posted in Political Prisoners and Prisoners of War on BTR Community in that group. Please, group members, share that as well with the other social media networks you may be have an account with. Help us spread those. You might see you will see this in our social media account, Political Prisoner Radio and Black Talk Radio Network, I'm sure. But let me read this to you. This is action that you can take just simply by signing your name digitally to this petition. Says President Obama issue a medical parole for Imam Jamil Alameen, formerly known as H-Rap Brown. And I quote him a lot. We might play clips on the station of him spitting some of his wisdom as a young black man under the system of racism. still practicing slavery. Let me see. They have reached 89% of their goal. Wow, that's great. Over 7,500 people have signed. Well, their goal is 7,500. 732 people have signed the petition. So it says, again, it's a medical parole. Remember, they tried to kill him. Political Prisoner Radio, which was produced on this network, is kind of on hiatus. Not kind of like it is on hiatus right now. But I still post information to the Facebook page and also, of course, Political Prisoners and Prisoners of War group on btrcommunity.com. So I'm glad to see that people are responding. But we were reporting when he had an abscess in his tooth, and they let it go untreated for months and months. I mean, obviously, you're going to have pus build up. Not to sound gross, but you need to know. Because they're gross. They're evil people. And they let this build up to one side of his face was swollen, obviously. Poison can get into your blood. That can kill a person. So the advocates in the political prisoner and prisoner of war community put out the social media calls to actions, call people, call the prison, call the wardens, sign this email, fax here, fax there. People answer that calls. Probably saved his life. I think it went 7 months untreated, if I remember correctly. Finally, he went to a dentist, and that's they tested his blood, and that's when they found he had his rare blood disease. Now, he's in prison on a frame-up of killing some sheriffs, but it's totally a frame-up. They had, again, this is that post-9/11 reinvigoration of COINTELPRO to target specifically Muslims, and he had done converted to Muslim, then had this other background. So you can read the details. I always tell people to do research for themselves, but I'm focusing on this petition right now. So this is the message of the people who put together this petition on empowerchange.org. Says, President Obama, we call upon you to spare the life of Imam Jamil Abdullah Al-Amin, formerly known as H-Rap Baron. Imam Jamil, 73, has suffered imprisonment for over 16 years, 12 years in solitary confinement for no reason, no infractions, no nothing. I remember reporting the stories. Remember, solitary is torture. Why did President Obama sign this executive order to take children in federal custody, prohibit them from being put into solitary confinement? Because maybe he doesn't agree, or maybe that's the only concession he could get. I don't mean to speak for him, but trying to rationalize it. But his administration was against, obviously, the torture of children, with the medical and psychiatrist community saying that solitary confinement is torture. Now, 7 of those years were in Supermax Federal Prison in Florence, Colorado. While in administrative maximum facility, he had no human contact, no fresh air, nor sunlight. Now that Iman, this is when they also was not giving him medical treatment for that abscess tooth. Now that he has been diagnosed with an incurable cancer, and the prison has proven unable to provide medical care, please release him to medical parole, also known as medical furlough and humanitarian parole. So it goes on to read a couple of more paragraphs. Please check that out. I will make sure that I share it again to our social media outlets as soon as the program concludes. So that'll be at Black Talk Radio on Twitter, Black Talk Radio Network on Facebook, Political Prisoner Radio on Facebook, and also Move to Abolish 21st Century Slavery and Human Trafficking, also on Facebook. I don't recommend people use those personally, but I'm running a propaganda operation, so we are also fishing for lost souls so we can bring them to enlightenment with by way of the other members of BTRCommunity.com. So check that out. That's in the group, as I just mentioned, Political Prisoners and Prisoners of War. Some other news. Let me check the date on this. This is past date, so I won't share that one. What's some of the other news of the day? Some of the things that kind of caught my eye as we really wind down in these last 10 minutes. Always stuff that's worthy of sharing. Let's see, we got some gentrification going on with your Democratic mayor, de Blasio. This is nothing new. It's just this policy and his support for gentrification, as well as New York City Council, was identified earlier this year, but now they're getting ready to implement the gentrification of Harlem by this rezoning plan. And according to this article published on DNAinfo.com, the mayor's Harlem rezoning plan is reminiscent of billionaire Bloomberg, says a critic. A small coalition of local community groups held a press conference Monday to call on Mayor Bill de Blasio, Democrat, to halt his proposed rezoning of the neighborhood. So you can check out more there. See, what else can you find? Chicago crime rate is clouding the nation's view of safety, says a report. That's also from DNAinfo.com. Again, these are articles that you can find that I've shared on my personal profile. It's a public profile with all these news stories that I posted today. This one just 4 hours ago. Again, this is coming to you from DNAinfo.com. Chicago crime rate clouding nation's view of safety. According to this report, a national poll shows more than half of those responding think. Now, that's a key word right there. Half of them responding think violent crime is getting worse in the country, with more than 75% of supporters of Donald Trump believing it to be true. But that pessimistic view, reflected in a recent Pew Research report, is contrary to declines in crime in the country. So what we continue to see from federal reports in this Pew Research is a quote-unquote independent organization collecting opinions and doing these polls nationally and what have you. And they always use Chicago. Just think of the media that you see, especially these right-wing media, whether it be CNN, whether it be Fox News. And they always bring up Chicago. Even black people always bring up Chicago if they want to criticize the black community as a whole. Look at Chicago. Look at Chicago. Look at Chicago. Look at Chicago. So nationally, everybody getting programmed, and we tend to think what? All black people are all urban dwellers, or all this kind of reported high crime is everywhere. And it is not true. So we got people who then will use that public opinion, that faulty public opinion, to point to that and say, hey, we got support to criminalize this, that, and the other, and lock up all these people. Again, they always talk about law and order. They don't talk about freedom, liberty, and justice. Law and order, just two words. So I'm not surprised, given the programming. This is nothing new. Donald Trump did go out there and hype it up a bit And he had, again, people like David Clark and The Hill, the prestigious white people's paper out of Washington, D.C., gave him a full-page editorial rant, opinion, just say whatever he wanted to say, in which he called for the murder of black people, called for them to be exterminated, just like we just heard from that move bombing clip. I am not exaggerating, people. Y'all know it's true. If you know anything about the rantings of David Clark, but you can look that up. He called for it. He said it's a civil war going on. He said, often repeated and included in that piece, said that Black Lives Matter is the enemy. They come to your community, push them out. But in that Hill piece, he called for them to be killed. This is man's showcase as a prominent speaker on law and order at the Republican National Convention. Now his name is being mentioned as Homeland Security Chief. And white people will support him because they think they will. Again, this is proxy racism. They use black people for cover. But I'm not one to give up hope. If anything, I'm going to intensify my efforts by the resources that are provided to me to enable our operations. I will intensify. I already found using a great tool in these propaganda wars for sharing information on social media. I got a tweet today, from the service I'm using. I posted 1,000 tweets since I used it. Now that spread over about, well, they only allow you to have about 10 accounts. I got about 70. 50 of them at least are dormant. I'm only using 10 of them. I got a lot over the years. And so, but that has enabled me to manage and spread information, change deceptive headlines. Because again, most people on Facebook, they don't click through and read the article. And I've heard white supremacists in media complain about Facebook gives people the ability to change the headline before they share it. A lot of people don't know that. I made videos about it and shared it with people. It didn't become popular, so it's not really common knowledge to most people. And again, they practice racism and deception through words. So I'm knowing that most people on social media only read headlines and look at pictures. And they might read that little tiny paragraph, maybe about 3 or 4 sentences, that it allows you to share from the piece. And I edited it and put what I want to, or the highlights that I want to focus on. The only truth that's being spoken usually is in quotations of a victim. So I share that and change the headline to make it more accurate and share it on Facebook. Oh, they don't like that. So again, this is just knowing how to counter racism in social media, since billions of people are utilizing it. We just have to be smart with how we use it. We have to protect ourselves as well. So it is no, they remember they were talking about fake news the other day, the headline, the fake news on Facebook. And what they're really saying is this news that was not favorable to Hillary Clinton. No matter if the articles were factual or not. Come on. The people back in Clinton, the billionaires, had hired trolls on Facebook to spread rumors, to spread lies, to attack people online. Look at how they acting now. So, but the fake news they talking about is like Black Talk Radio, anything coming from us, anything coming from any other black people on there talking bad about Hillary Clinton's documented history of being a key component in passing legislation to increase modern slavery like never before in history. And now they're talking, predicting that under Donald Trump, wow, what it could be looking like. All based on propaganda, like this Chicago crime rate clouding the nation's view of quote unquote safety. Crime is dropping, but they believe it's going up. What a world we live in. Support independent media. Become an independent media producer. Especially if you don't have any independent black media where you live. You may have some black people integrated into the propaganda outlets targeting your area. You may have some networks and they just trying to get paid, and it's basically entertainment and all music. Nothing wrong with music, nothing wrong with entertainment. But 24 hours of programming of that? Come on now. So it is very simple for you to start your own platform, media platform, including video, digital radio, podcasting, and it's not as expensive as you might think. So you become that media outlet, recruit others, then y'all document these crimes that's going on in your community, expose the crooks, the Hillary Clinton's in training, the Donald Trump's in training. So we can help you with that. BlackTalkMediaProject.org. Just reach out to me. We can set up a consultation. So I'm going to conclude the broadcast. Again, want to thank Sophia Williams for being who she is and obtaining some information that really opened up her eyes, and taking that information, processing it, and making a decision that she was not wanting to participate in society and did not want this type of society to perpetuate itself, and got involved in the radical activism that she is engaged in and out there promoting and bringing attention to victims like Ramona Africa, and just showing black people the work that many grassroots activists are involved in that are not going to be featured. They're not going to be called upon on CNN by anybody to participate. No, they're going to send Charles Barkley to your Baltimore church with the TNT cameras in tow, and he's going to say some off-the-wall stuff like he said, and everybody's going to get angry and emotional, and the people with the cameras are going to be focusing in on you, and then wait till them white supremacists back at the studios get a hold of that and how they chop it up and edit it. And then also pay attention to how many advertisements you will see during the commercials, and think about how much money those corporations paid to have a commercial on this series, this new TNT series featuring Charles Barkley, of all people, speaking on racism and holding town hall, quote unquote, leading, because he's an athlete and he led people, never led anybody to an NBA championship, I don't think, but I could be wrong. I don't care. It's not important. But, oh, he's going to lead us in a discussion on justice with his history. Check out my last podcast on that. So, man, change is not going to come by itself. It takes people. So be safe out here behind these enemy lines. Tomorrow, some black independent media, you definitely will be on air Saturday night. The contest of white supremacy hosted compensatory. Call in. The Justice radio station, they're like on 6 days a week at 11 o'clock a.m. So check them out as well. And again, there is hundreds, maybe over 1,000 podcasts, mostly all of them dealing with racism, slavery, and the mistreatment of people all over the planet. So recognizing that, you need to be safe behind these enemy lines. Peace and blessings. We'll be right back.